Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So living together and spending time together in community, though we don't meet formally very much here, it's always very good to actually come together occasionally and sit in silence together in this lovely hall, and to also have an opportunity just to listen to the Dhamma or reflect on the Dhamma together, because it's a different occasion, a different opportunity than just practicing alone and doing one's own study and contemplation. So I thought tonight I would just reflect a little bit about I was reading the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta earlier this evening and the other day, beginning to dip into it. And it's a really very beautiful sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya. Dhatu Vibhanga means exposition on the elements or analysis of the elements. And it's been one of my favorite suttas actually for many years. And I go back to it because it's so rich and it's evocative. If any of you have read some of the suttas in the different Nikayas, they all have, some of them are very similar, some of them are very formulaic, and some of them, to me at least, some of them stand out as being very evocative of real people in a real place, in a real time. And it sometimes depends a bit on the quality of the translation. I know Aya Naroda, one of her favorite teachings, and my own is Dr. Satatisa's translation of The Way to Beyond in the Sutta Nipata, because it's so evocative, his translation, but also these are a series of questions that Brahmin students who sought out the Buddha, who walked to meet him, particularly to talk to him and ask him what their deep questions were and to hear his responses. So in that particular teaching we have this lovely series of questions and responses full of simile, full of image, but for me, and I think for many others, very evocative. It evokes a mood, evokes emotion of real people, real relationship, intimate connection, and people seeking truth and gaining this beautiful wisdom from the Buddha. You can almost feel the faith, you know, being translated through the pages, the saddha, the deep saddha, and the joy at their liberation when they hear the truth and realize something for themselves. And of course the Buddha answers each person's query. Each person brings a different piece of a question, of their own personal puzzle, to understanding this predicament we find ourselves in of birth and death and dukkha and confusion, being caught in the maya. And the Buddha answers each of them somewhat differently. He's always pointing to the truth, to the Dhamma, to the qualities of the Dhamma, but to each of them slightly differently. And so this evokes something really personable and intimate, whereas some other suttas can be quite formulaic, given to a gathered crowd and a lot of repetition. But anyway, this sutta, the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, is similar, at least to me. You have the Buddha, a chance meeting of a man who has gone forth out of faith, because he's just heard of the Buddha. He hasn't even met the Buddha. He hasn't heard teachings directly from the Buddha, but this man has gone forth out of faith, and he's staying in a potter's shed one night, and along comes a Buddha also looking for a place to stay. And the Buddha asked the potter if he can stay in this potter's shed, and the potter said, well, there's another mendicant there, but go and ask him if he's happy to have you there. Yes, you're welcome to stay. And the Buddha goes along and asks him, his name's Pukkasati, if he's happy for him to also share the potter's shed for one night. And Pukkasati says, yes. Yes, friend, you're most welcome to. You know, he didn't recognize the Buddha, he just looked like a bhikkhu, a samana, and said, yes, you're welcome, friend. Share this abiding for the night. And so the Buddha just sets up some grass, some hay to make himself comfortable, and sits and meditates and notices that Pukkasati is sitting quietly and meditating through the night. And apparently they both sat through the night quietly meditating. And the Buddha thinks to himself at some point that this person he's sharing the shed with is conducting himself in a very good way. So he thinks to speak to him and ask him. And then he finds out that he said, who's your teacher, friend? Who have you gone forth under? And he said, oh, I've heard of this someone called Gautama Buddha who's awakened. He has a good reputation. And out of inspiration, I've gone forth under his name. And he doesn't know he's talking to the Buddha. You know? Cool, isn't it? You know? And the Buddha just thinks to himself, you know, maybe I should give him a teacher. He's actually gone forth out of faith in my name. And he says, have you ever met the Buddha? Have you ever met Gautama? He says, no, friend. He says, do you know where he lives? He says, yes, he lives in Sarvati. You know, he says, oh, okay, would you recognize him if you see him? No, I've never met him, he said. So anyway, the Buddha thinks, I'll give this worthy, I presume he's a young man, I don't know any history of Pukkasati, but I'll give him a teaching. He said, listen, bhikkhu. And I found it interesting he calls him bhikkhu, because he's not ordained with the Buddha, but bhikkhu just meaning one who's gone forth, left home for homelessness to seek the truth, to seek the Dharma, to seek the deathless. And he says, listen, bhikkhu, I'll give you some teachings. And he said, that would be good. And so he starts and he says, and this is a kind of a rendition of the Dharma that you don't get in many places. I mean, the bits of it, but the way it comes together is interesting. And he says, this person is made of, or rather, this person consists of six elements, of six spaces of contact, of 18 kinds of mental exploration, and they have four foundations. And he continues to explain, he goes on to explain what each of these things are. And of course, you know, this person consists of the six elements. So he goes through these six elements, the earth element, the water element, the fire element, the air element, the space element, and the consciousness element. And then he goes into explaining what the earth element is, and the water, the air, and fire element. And we all know these particular formulas, but he's taking the bhikkhu through an internal meditation, internal contemplation, as you contemplate what is it internally that is earth element and names everything that is solid that can be known and seen directly in this body. And this is the earth element internally. And it's the same as the earth element externally. Internally and externally, it's just earth element. It's not me, it's not mine, it's not what I am. It doesn't belong to me. He takes him again internally. What is the water element, the fire element, the air element? It's the same as the external water, fire, air element. What you see out there that is watery, that is airy, that is fiery or has heat, temperature. You know, internally and externally, they're the same elements. And to learn to, or to practice to see these elements as not me, not mine, not what I am, not belonging to me. They're simply elements. And then he takes him to also identify the space element internally, the spaciousness within the body. Simple things you can know directly, the space in the cavity, the mouth in the cavity, the ears, the space in the gut, which obviously has space to consume the food, and whatever other spaces you might recognize as belonging to the space element internally. This is also the same as the space element externally. And train to see it as not me, not mine, not what I am, not belonging to me. So this first exploration on the six elements of this this person, this body, this being, at least the five elements will come to consciousness in a minute. We recognize when we do this contemplation, when you, even as you read the sutta, if you take it as a contemplation, or if someone's giving a guided meditation on the elements, or if you're simply guiding yourself, to really recognize the touch, the contact of each different kind of, you know, the solid, the hardness, the wateriness, the airiness, the temperature, the heat, the cold, the space. To see that for yourself, to recognize that for yourself. And as you're knowing it and seeing it, understanding, this is an object, this is seen with awareness. It's not a me, not a mine, not a self. It's seen to arise and cease with each moment of contact. As you contact, as the mind contacts and understands these different elements. And he goes through explaining, he mentions the conscious element, but he comes to that a little bit later. But he explains that these, the next thing is that this person consists of is the six bases of contact. To really understand the six bases of contact, which is the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body and the mind, where we experience the world in each moment through contact with the eyes, through seeing, or through hearing, or through smelling, tasting, or tactile sensation, or when any of these, or thinking about these, contacts the mind element, the mind base. And he talks about how this contact is a is the basis for feeling to arise upon contact. In Paticca Samuppada, the place of sense contact, feeling always arises upon passa, sense contact. Vedana arises in dependence on passa. To know this and to see this, and he talks about this contact when we, when feeling arises, feeling it's either pleasant or painful or neutral feeling that arises on any of these sense contacts. But with the cessation of that contact, so there comes the cessation of that feeling. Each feeling arises independent on contact. It cannot arise without that contact. But when that moment of contact ceases, the corresponding feeling ceases. And this is such an important thing to consider and see, to see the truth that this is a process, that this is a dependently arisen process, not a me, a mine, a what I am. Neither does it belong to me. Because this is where the place where our sense of our cherished sense of self and what I want and what I don't want is constantly, fairly persistently arising at the point of feeling tone, sense contact and feeling tone. When we feel something unpleasant or experience something unpleasant, we don't want it. When we experience something pleasant quite naturally, we want it. And when we're experiencing something neutral, generally the deluded mind kind of ignores it or brushes over it because it's not as obvious or as calling for our attention as either the pleasant or the unpleasant. But this is where we get caught in a spin. This is where we get caught into the production of dukkha and the continued production of samsara, is we get caught in chasing the pleasant and either denying or struggling with or trying to get away from the unpleasant. And the only escape out of this is to realize that it is that content, sense contact and feeling tone are conditioned and conditionally arisen processes. They are actually impermanent. They arise and cease depending on other conditions. Being impermanent, they are dukkha. Being impermanent, dukkha, they are not self. This is one of the most important doorways for our contemplation. And the Buddha talking to Pukkasati here, guiding him through a contemplation, is saying to know this clearly. And he gives this simile of two fire sticks coming together. So as contact gives rise to feeling tone, when they come together there's a pleasant feeling or an unpleasant feeling, but when their contact ceases, feeling tone ceases. It's like two fire sticks being separated. They can't give rise to fire anymore, but bring them back together and rub them like fire sticks and they give rise to fire. And this is a direct simile used a lot in the Buddha's teaching or in those times. The fire is that of agitation, of greed, hatred, delusion, and these two fire sticks coming together, where we don't really understand the impermanent, conditionally arisen nature of contact, sense contact and feeling, then it ignites this becoming, this usually the craving, the clinging, the becoming. What follows upon feeling tone in Paticca Samuppada gives rise to craving, clinging, becoming, birth, old age, sickness, death, dukkha, around the whole cycle again. So really understanding these particular points through our meditative inquiry is the escape route. I don't use those words lightly because I don't like to use the word escape, because psychologically it sounds like you're running away from something. But the Buddha uses what gets translated as escape quite often, escaping Mara's snare. And the more you practice, or at least the more I practice, I realize how much of a difficult snare it is to escape. Such a difficult snare. This experience of samsara, the conditioned, compounded nature of this mind driven by karma. It has this force, it has this thrust, it has this ongoing momentum that we get pulled along with. And unless we make a real, I don't want to say a strong effort, but a clear, determined intention to look according to what the Buddha's pointing out, we're going to miss the escape route that he's pointing to. And the escape route is through wisdom. The escape route is sharpening, understanding what he's pointing to consistently throughout all his teaching career. He kept talking about all that is conditioned is impermanent, it's unsatisfactory, it's not self, it's not what you're looking for. As soon as there's any clinging, any identification with it, it's dukkha instantly and dukkha in the future. So we need to really see that, but not as a theory, not as something to get hung up on or to beat ourselves up about or to get burdened with sorrow about, but to activate an inquiry so you can find the escape. Because these characteristics, anicca, dukkha, anatta, You know, they're not the problem. They're the insight. They're the route to insight into these things. The doorway out. So for myself, I can see myself lamenting over dukkha quite a lot. But that's not what the Buddha wants you to do. He doesn't want you to lament over dukkha. He wants you to realize dukkha too is impermanent. It's conditionally arisen and it's not self. It arises in this moment based on ignorance in the first place, but where you can see it really happening and where you can slip through the gaps, so to speak, is where contact, sense contact, any moment of sense contact gives rise to feeling tone, or feeling tone consequently, subsequently gives rise to craving, to tanha. Tanha is also anicca, dukkha, anatta, conditionally arisen. But it's this sequence, passa, vedana, tanha, upadana, where we can really see what's happening in the moment and in our practice try to understand what it is to slip through the gap. That's my words, not the Buddha's. But so anyway, he continues in this teaching to Pukkasati, taking him through the contemplation on the elements. He takes him to a place of equanimity. Well, once he's examined the five elements, earth, water, fire, air and space, he says, you know, then there remains only the consciousness element, which is, you know, clear and bright. And he says, what does consciousness know? And he says it knows feeling, it knows pleasant, it knows painful, it knows neither pleasant nor painful. So there he kind of goes into that inquiry about where feeling tone arises on contact. Simply know it's pleasant. And when a pleasant feeling is experienced, he knows it's a pleasant feeling. And when an unpleasant feeling is experienced, he knows it's an unpleasant feeling. That's all. So this is also a place for us to sharpen our practice, really, and sharpen our wisdom. You know, to know it just for what it is, a pleasant feeling or a painful feeling in and of itself is not a problem, but just know it as it is. And simply understand that it rises in dependence on a contact to be felt as either painful or pleasant or neutral. So he's asking us, or he's encouraging us, to just really understand that conditioned process and let your wisdom mature through that. And as a consequence of that contemplation, just knowing pleasant, painful as it is, conditionally arisen, he talks about coming to a place of equanimity. And the equanimity, what remains is equanimity, he says. And he talks about the equanimity of the mind, basically making the mind very malleable, bright and clear, kind of lucid. And it's interesting because at this point, and he's guiding Pukkasati, he says that now, from this place, you know, a bhikkhu or the meditator considers, if I were to direct this equanimity to the base of infinite space, or the base of infinite consciousness, or the base of nothingness, or the base of neither perception nor non-perception. So these are the four arupa jhanas. So he's basically saying, once at equanimity, this is at the base of the fourth jhana. But he wants the bhikkhu to realize, if I were to direct this equanimity to the arupa jhanas, he realizes that would be conditioned. And my mind might stay there for a long time and I might develop it there, but that would be conditioned. And whatever is conditioned is unsatisfactory, is impermanent, is not self. And the Buddha repeats this for each of the four arupa planes to help him recognize that even though that might be attractive to develop your mind at that level, that wisdom should recognize that any intention towards directing your mind towards anything is conditioned, unsatisfactory, not so. And then he says that bhikkhu, something like that bhikkhu, when he realizes that that would be conditioned to direct his mind elsewhere, he does not generate any intention or form any condition towards either being or not being. And in not forming any condition or generating any intention towards either being or not being, he abides not clinging to anything in the world. And when he abides not clinging to anything in the world, his mind is unagitated. And when his mind is unagitated, he personally realizes Nibbana. Such a simple yet profound and beautiful sequence there. When one does not form any condition or generate any intention towards either being or not being, towards becoming something other, towards getting something other, towards getting away from something, or just not wanting to be this, wanting to be that, not generating any intention or forming any condition, resting in equanimity, resting in natural great peace, one is not clinging to anything in the world. And that not clinging, with not clinging, the mind is not agitated. When the mind is not agitated, one personally realizes Nibbana. Such a clear, clear pointer. And of course in the sutta, at least the commentaries tell us at this stage that Pukkasati realizes the path and fruit of non-returner, and he also recognizes that he's in the presence of the Buddha. And the sutta goes on for a bit longer, but this is the beautiful sequence, I think, that we can all follow through the contemplation of wisdom, with wisdom, the contemplation of the elements of sense contact, of feeling tone, of Vedana, practicing to see clearly is conditioned, conditionally arisen, anicca. It's not worth hanging on to, it's dukkha. It's not worth identifying with. To encourage the mind to rest in this place of equanimity, the stillness between the gaps of agitated movement, of becoming. And to learn to rest rather than be caught by that stream of karma, that stream of karma vipaka, which tends to move you on into the future. What is it to rest out of that, to recognize the gap between sense contact and feeling tone, or where feeling tone gives rise, we either buy into it and we get swept along in the stream of becoming, or we struggle with it and try not to become or wish to get rid of. What is it to not move in either of those directions, to slip between craving for being and craving for not being? Is to rest in that bright, deep equanimity and experience letting go of craving or clinging even for a moment, and experiencing the rest of that, the peace of that, the non-agitation of that. This is the escape route to realize Nibbana. Now, of course, Pukkasati was ripe, had the powerful impact of the presence of the Buddha, who could speak to him, within him almost, exactly what he needed to hear, to awaken at least to the level of non-returner. But it leaves for us some beautiful, beautiful clues and encouragement to explore that particular trajectory, if that is something that is your inclination, through the elements, through paticca-samuppada, sense bases, feeling tone. And to come to understand this profound, you know, years of trying to understand for myself, what does he mean by bhava? You know, it's bhava, being, becoming, existence, these are different translations. And non-being, non-becoming, non-existence, these are quite abstract words. It can take years to get to understand. What is that pointing to as an experience within one's own mind, within this flow of paticca-samuppada? And when you can see those links flowing on for yourself, it becomes clearer how to just see them as anicca, dukkha, anatta, particularly as he's encouraging in that sutta, as not me, not mine, not what I am, to the point of just resting out altogether. As Ajahn Brahm often talks about, letting go of the will. And I often hear that and I think, how do you do that? The thing is, you don't do it. But there is a place within a contemplative exploration one can realize it's possible to slip between or slip beyond that trajectory of willing, wanting to move into the future perpetually, or wanting to just cut out altogether. Avoiding these two extremes, the Buddha teaches, is the way to Nibbana. And avoiding is probably not a good translation, because it's really it's a full-on apprehension or comprehension of what these two extremes are as movements in the mind, in the meditative mind. And how to see the movement as something that arises and ceases and just not worth buying into one way or the other. And this moves us into his last point in the sutta, where he says this person has four foundations. Foundation of wisdom, the foundation of truth, foundation of relinquishment, and the foundation of peace. So, not the four foundations of mindfulness we're talking about here. And we hear from the Buddha not to neglect wisdom. It becomes a foundation for one to stand on to realize Nibbana. And he points out the wisdom is that of seeing that these khandhas, these sense bases, these elements are not me, not mine, not what I am. They don't belong to me. Just to explore that, to see that, not to speculate about it or try to overlay concepts, but explore the experience of the elements and sense contact. That which knows these things to arise and cease is the wisdom that comes to understand the not-self nature of them. And standing on the foundation of truth, here in this sutta he calls Nibbana is the highest noble truth. Standing on the foundation of truth. In other suttas we hear the Buddha encouraging practitioners to turn the mind to the deathless element, and standing upon that, one can realize Nibbana. But I think there's also another aspect of truth as being a foundation. Even seeing the mundane truths which form our path and our understanding of what is impermanent, what is unsatisfactory, to see what arises and ceases, to come to understand the conditioned reality is also a truth to be understood. For in understanding these conditioned experiences for what they truly are, with that understanding we see beyond them to the deathless, to Nibbana, the unconditioned. And the foundation of relinquishment, he says, I think, don't neglect wisdom, rely on truth, cultivate relinquishment. I'm not sure what the Pali is of that word, whether it's patinitsaga or watsaga, but relinquishment is a lovely evocative concept of it's more like a profound letting go, just learning how to not hang on, how to not cling, how to let go. But relinquishing is like relinquishing something that is a burden, that is onerous, that is a pain. Cultivate relinquishment. And to train in peace is a fourth foundation. Or to practice for peace. So realizing that, I don't know about anyone else, but for me it's only peace that brings me happiness. The occasions that I touch into it, it's like, yes, nothing else that the mind searches for, just that deep peace. But we have to come to appreciate it more and more, to train this mind actually, because this mind is conditioned to think the best happiness is out there when I get this or that or whatever makes me feel good, or the pleasant sensations, or get rid of the unpleasant. But actually that just keeps us running, it just keeps us spinning. It doesn't actually end that samsara. True peace, true happiness is in as a result of relinquishing. Relinquishing being caught in the spin. Relinquishing that which is anicca, dukkha, anatta. But only when you see it for yourself, otherwise it becomes a pushing away. See it, and relinquishment is the next thing that happens. So training the mind for peace is learning how to taste this peace and recognize it. It's not excitement, it's not about the chase or the search of anything. It's kind of as a consequence of slipping through that gap of relinquishing, realizing that the abandoning of craving is peace. The abandoning of clinging is peace, is pleasure. So the sutta goes on, I won't go on much more. It has a sad ending, and sad but not sad. Pukkasati, of course, recognizes the Buddha, apologizes for calling him friend, asks for the going forth under the Buddha. And the Buddha says, well, I can't give the going forth unless you have your bowl and robes, which he didn't have. So he went out in search of them and got killed by one of those wild cows. Mad cows that killed quite a few people in Buddha's day. But I didn't have time to get to the end of the sutta tonight, so now I'm actually unsure whether he attained arahantship when he passed away, or he just, the Buddha, when the other bhikkhus asked what Pukkasati's destination was either he attained arahantship or he got reborn in the as a non-returner, wherever he got reborn, he attained arahantship from there, not being coming back to this world. So, thanks to Venerable Pukkasati and Venerable Gautama Buddha, we've got a lovely teaching that we're still contemplating 2.5 millennia from the time. And so I'd very much, if you don't know the sutta, I very much encourage you to read it and contemplate it deeply. It's Majjhima 140, I think, Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So I offer these reflections for all of us to contemplate tonight.